Right. Everything he says is magnified.
Recorded
times
two. Live.
Yeah, we may need to be in different rooms or something.
It's crazy. That is crazy, but I think we can all be in the same room together.
Yeah.
Virtually, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, here,
should
here
we try
then.
It this way? There is quite a delay there, surprisingly. I guess it has to reach a satellite or something and come back.
Yeah.
He surprised me again every time he says something, and I think I got it, and then he says it again.
That is pretty bad, yeah. That is pretty bad.
Yeah.
You guys should walk away from one another as quickly as possible.
Okay, I'm closing a door between us.
Okay.
Fantastic. That's
something
better.
Has come between us. But, you know, it's ironic that we've closed a door between us to have a conversation that will last forever or in perpetuity, theoretically, online since, now we're actually...
No. It will last until the collapse of civilization, which is imminent, as we all know.
Right.
I beg to differ. I believe that this will actually emanate into the universe and be transmitted in radio frequencies and, vibrations emanating forever on and on into the universe indefinitely, won't it?
Yes, if we were broadcasting like radio, you would probably be correct. Unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your perspective, we're recording to a, like an MP3 file that's going to be stored on a server somewhere, which...
So it'll last till like next year, maybe.
It will last until the collapse of civilization as we know it, which...
Which is the internet.
Which is very soon. But we should just say, for all those who are listening, for our thousands, if not millions of fans out there, that we are back for another installment of J&B's Nightcap. And this time, we are graced with the presence of Cousin Matt as our special guest, our third party.
Yeah. So we've been doing this for some period of time. I can't even remember how long. It's been too long to remember, which means it's more than a couple of weeks. But the people who have really long memories and really obsessive tendencies may know Cousin Matt from previous episodes of the related television series Rocks, which aired in random places at random times in the past and online ever present. Matt, your shining moment that just comes to mind to me right now from that series, the television series, was I think it was I can't even remember what episode it was, but you were lying in my parents' bed wearing like a paper
crown.
Like
a
Burger
crown.
King crown, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
With my boyfriend.
And you
weren't
alone. That's what I was going to mention, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I was the king and he was the queen. And then we put the crown on his head and he became the king and I became the queen.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't go into that much detail. I hasten to add that,
it was only about the crown.
Paper crown was all you got to see, really.
Yeah.
But once in our lives, we exercise some discretion and let people's imaginations run wild. But, it never occurred to me, really, your relatives and so forth would see that episode. So I don't know if that caused any strife in the family. I hope not. But, if it did, that's all water under the bridge now, because that was many, many years ago.
I think by that point they were really used to what that television series was all about. It was actually, my mom actually and she is coming here to Missoula. It should be mentioned that Matt and I are in separate rooms of my basement here in my house in Missoula, Montana. And Bart, you are where in your house, or where, I should say?
I am in the kitchen of a new house here in New Orleans. And by new, I mean that when last we spoke on this podcast series, I was looking to sell the house that we were living in and buy a new one. And so that happened. Because it's been like a year, I think, almost a year, since we last spoke in this context. So I'm in a new location and yet still in the same city of New Orleans. Meanwhile, you and Matt are out there in Missoula, and in fact, this is all very significant because it was Matt that kind of drew you out there to Missoula in the first place, if I understand family history correctly.
It's all my fault.
Yeah, Matt rode his bicycle out here.
The breakup of J&B, right?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So he rode his bicycle out here from where, Matt? You can probably tell that part.
Yeah, I left Lexington, Kentucky. After returning to Lexington from Thailand, where I'd been for a year and a half, I decided to take a bike trip across the country, bicycle touring, and left Lexington in 97, summer of 97, and traveled out here and made it, had many adventures along the way, but got here in September of 97, and then Joe, I think, arrived in November, Joe?
Yeah, actually, I was trying to figure out what the fuck to do with my life, and I called Matt because I had decided that I was, it's a long fucking story, but in August of 97, I moved to New Mexico with a girlfriend. We were supposed to get married. Instead, she kicked me out on the third, fourth day that I was there, moved back to Georgia to stay with my mom because I was confused about what to do, decided that I was going to go back to Bloomington, Indiana, where Bart and I had lived, and then I immediately for like three or four nights in a row had these crazy nightmares that all seemed to have in common a theme of being trapped, being in a rut, you know, this kind of thing. So I called Matt to discuss this because he was sort of like my spiritual guru at the time. he had also just gotten to Missoula on his bicycle, so I wanted to chat. And he had a room in his basement.
Right.
And
Joe, I had no idea. I had no idea you ever had dreams for however many nights in a row about catastrophic disaster if you went back to Bloomington.
Yeah, I think that's new. That's a new wrinkle for me too. But because I heard the story or read about it anyway numerous times, and it's quite the.
So you were.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was guided by dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. That's no, I was cosmic. Totally guided by dreams.
And
totally guided
you,
by dreams. That's funny. I'm sure that I explained it to you at the time, Matt, but I think that probably other, you know, the more kind of material matters of it took hold quickly, and we talked about that stuff. But yeah, it was totally. I had reasoned out through. I literally, while I was in Georgia with my mom, I had written two journals worth of shit about what was fucked up in my life and how I needed to fix it and all of that. And I had gone through and done like pluses and minuses comparison of all the various options of what I should do, whether I should move back to Bloomington, whether I should stay in Georgia, whether I should go someplace new. And it made the most logical sense to go back to Bloomington for some period of time. And then immediately after I decided that I was going to do that, I had this series of ridiculously weird dreams. The only one that I remember, and I actually don't remember it, although it's probably in my journals, so I could probably come up with it for maybe our next conversation. But there was this weird plane crash dream where the plane just kept crashing, and like I was following it around, and it kept crashing, and it was like, huh, well, my life is, in this perpetual plane crash. Maybe I should change the route.
That is amazing. So, okay, if we're going down that road, I should try to reiterate as quickly as possible the cosmic significance of my arrival in Missoula.
Yeah.
Can I do that? Okay.
Yeah.
So I was in Thailand, and realizing that I needed to change my career from music and theater to something useful and beneficial to people on the planet. And I was trying to figure out how in the world economics could be based on a system of infinite exponential growth when we live on a finite planet. And I was at a meditation retreat, a Buddhist meditation retreat, and at the end of the retreat, I overheard a guy saying to another guy, yeah, I'm an environmental economist. I'm economist. And so I realized I needed to talk to that guy, and I did. And I said, where would one go to study environmental economics? And he said, Missoula, Montana. And I said, where the fuck is that? What? And it was Missoula, Montana. I'd never heard of it before. So I thought, okay, well, I'll take down some information and investigate that, and just sort of filed that away. And then a couple of months later, I went to another meditation retreat, you know, cosmic significance of all this. At the end of the next meditation retreat, I was washing the sheets with a guy doing some volunteer work, and this guy said he was from Missoula, Montana, and that if I needed a place to live, that he would give me some contact information, and he was going to be renting his house out the summer that I was going to be arriving here. And I thought, oh, wow, that's a crazy coincidence. Well, I'll file that away. And so still was not convinced that I was going to go to this crazy place called Missoula, Montana. But I did want to travel across the country and visit organic farms and intentional communities in which people were trying to figure out more sustainable ways to live on this planet. And as I was doing that, I was also shopping for a bicycle because I was not going to own a car at this point in my life. Another resolution. So I was buying bicycle panniers in Cincinnati, Ohio, and the guy that sold me the panniers said, oh, you know what? I have these maps. And they were produced by this place called Adventure Cycling. It's in Missoula, Montana, and they take you across the country and give you all these guidelines on routes to take and, best places to camp and all that stuff. And I looked at these maps, and sure enough, they went right through Berea, Kentucky, which is 40 miles south of Lexington, and then went straight to Missoula, Montana. And I thought, okay, but that's really far north, and I don't really want to go there. But you know what? It takes me to Colorado, and then if I take a bend south from there, I can go to Taos, New Mexico, where an old friend lives, and I could check out the earth ships there that are homes built out of old tires and built into the south facing slopes of hillsides, and they're, you know, self heating and all of that. And I was really interested in that. So I thought, well, okay, I'll follow these maps that far and I'll pick out some sustainable communities and organic farms to visit along the way. And then I'll just turn south in Colorado and go to Taos. Well, that worked pretty well. And I got to the Ozarks, and I started to diverge from the road just enough to go to an intentional community called East Wind. And when I got to East Wind, I was housed in the guest cabin and woke up after my first morning there and looked down below in the bunk. It was a bunk bed thing, and there's this guy sleeping below me that I hadn't met before. And he was actually really cute, by the way, and I was kind of like, wow, huh, exactly. And so he kind of rolls over and stretches and opens these beautiful eyes, and I'm thinking, wow, what luck, you know? And, you know, not that I knew anything about him at the time, you know, but it was just, you know, a nice vision for the moment. Anyway, we start chatting, and, oh, where are you from? Missoula, Montana. And it's like, wow, huh, okay. So I ended up spending 3 weeks at this intentional community and kind of got to be friends with this guy. Of course, he turned out to be straight, and it was all, you know, he had his reasons for being there, kind of similar to mine. But he was going to school in Missoula, Montana, and he ended up a couple of weeks later saying, hey, well, if you decide to go to Missoula, Montana, you know, you can crash at my place when you get there, and you'll, you know, at least have a place to land, and then you can find out where to rent a place and find a job and whatever. And that was the last thing I needed. I was like, well, shit, I guess I'm going to Missoula, Montana. And so, yeah, just this whole crazy series of things that ended up taking me to this place where I did not expect or really want to go. And yet I arrived here, and then Joe ended up out here, and lo and behold, here we are going on 13 years later. And
yeah,
we found lives here that are pretty damn cool, I have to say.
Yeah,
so there
for sure.
Go.
I mean, you know, we earlier kind of communicated briefly via email about how you wanted to revisit the TV series Rocks, and where we got stalled was on an episode about life and death, which was an episode which comprised material that we had recorded related to your daughter's birth and my son's birth and my father's death. And it should be noted now that Matt, my gay cousin, who, you know, I think pretty much at least his parents had probably suspected for quite a while they weren't going to get a grandson out of him, is expecting a child next month.
What?
And that, yeah, you don't know about it, do you?
No.
yeah, July 31st, not even next month.
This month, yeah, that's
the
right.
The due date is July 31st, and the two mothers, Maggie Heidi and Rachel Lohman, are the recipients of a sperm donation from yours truly.
Right.
And they will be mothers very soon here, and I will be a participating father in raising this kid. His name's going to be Wilder Matthew Lohman. The Matthew, by the way, is partially for me and partially for Rachel's brother. Rachel is the non-biological mother, and she's going to be, her brother is Matthew as well. So, yeah, so that's totally exciting. And
that is pretty awesome.
As long as, you know, we're sort of bringing cosmic significance into this whole episode, I should add that my brother and his wife are also pregnant at the same time. And there's a whole nother long story there, but my sister-in-law is going to have a scheduled C-section. She's had Crohn's disease, so she has to have a C-section.
All right.
And that is scheduled for August 3rd. So, you know, these kids are going to be born within weeks of each other, guaranteed. And, you know, it could even be on the same day. Cue the Twilight Zone scene here. Yeah.
So is this cosmic shit or what?
It is cosmic. So, Matt, and both of your parents are still alive?
Yes, and absolutely beside themselves with excitement over the potential, you know, two grandkids arriving into the world at the virtually the same time, regardless of which exact days. I mean, they're gestating as we speak, just ready to pop out at any moment. We'll see who wins.
Yeah. You know, I think that I haven't actually asked your parents about this, Matt, but I would venture a guess that they had probably sort of intentionally sealed themselves to the reality that they would never have grandchildren because, you know, Dan, your older brother, who is what, 40, he's probably 44 now?
43. No, he'll 43, be 44
he'll be
in 44 August.
Next month, yeah. You know, he's getting up there, and they had been trying for a couple of years to have a kid, and it just seemed like her medical issues were such that it probably wasn't going to happen. And, of course, with you, I don't think that they, I mean, once you outed yourself, I suspect that they never really suspected to have a grandchild thanks to you. And now they'll have a grandson and a granddaughter all within a month.
Yeah. My mom was, you know, she had come to terms with me being gay and come to hope that I might adopt one of these days and that Dan and Jen might adopt. I mean, she would occasionally bring up the question of, well, you know, have you thought about, you know, adopting a, you know, one of the Asian babies opportunity. And, you know, I think that was kind of the best she was hoping for. It. That sounds bad. I mean, you know, she just was looking for any opportunity to, you know, be a grandmother. And so, yeah, Christmas was crazy last year because I went home trying to figure out how to break this news to them because I hadn't even told them what was going on at all. And I had told Dan, and he was not particularly supportive. He was like, oh, my God, you can't tell Mom and Dad. And I was like, why? What do you mean I can't tell Mom and Dad? I'm telling Mom and Dad. And he was like, well, it's going to be
weird.
So foreign to them. They're not going to know how to relate. What are they, you know, how are they going to respond? You know, and I was like, oh, Dan, come on. They're going to figure it out. And Mom's going to be super excited. And I realized later, I think Joe might have actually, you know, questioned this as well. Like, well, are they jealous? Because at the time, they were struggling to get pregnant as well. And they had actually, they had a miscarriage at the time that Maggie and Rachel and I were trying to conceive a child as well. And so I did not know that Dan and Jen were pregnant when I went home for Christmas, but I knew that we were, and I was going to break the news to my parents. So Christmas Eve, my brother breaks the news to me that they're pregnant. and, you know, we give each other a high five, and I'm thinking, huh, that's great. This is going to make it a lot easier. But I still was not, like, I had to go very carefully with breaking the news to everyone else, and I had this sort of plan in mind that I wanted to tell Mom first and then get to my dad, because my dad's the most conservative member of the family. They're both fundamentalist Christians. So the next morning, I struggled through the opening of presents as I maintained silence, and then finally told my mom, and she was super excited. And then we told Dan, and once he knew Mom was happy and there were no issues, then he was super excited. And so then we had to go tell my dad, and that was sort of this crazy thing. Because he was playing poker online with on the computer. And Mom was like, we gotta tell him now. So we go into his study where he's doing this, and Mom says, Alan, you gotta turn off the computer, you know, Matt's got big news. And Dan's like, yeah, whatever, you know, what do you got? And he just keeps staring at the computer screen and kind of clicking the mouse. And Mom finally says, Alan, really, you know, turn off the computer. We've got news. And he jokingly says, you're pregnant. And I say, bingo. And he says, hang on just a second. Let me turn off this computer. turns around.
I never heard this story. This is awesome.
Really? Yeah, it's totally true. He finally turns off the computer and turns around, and his first question is, are you going to be financially responsible for this kid?
Wow.
So, yeah, I told him the whole story, and ultimately he was like, well, that's different, but I'm happy for you. You know, he was ultimately supportive and great. So
that's about as awesome as you could hope for.
Yeah, yeah. So they're coming out end of next month.
Yeah.
And they're gonna meet the moms, and it's gonna be a party.
This is some pretty exciting stuff. I had no clue, you know, when we started up this. In fact, I had no clue that this was going to be a three-way tonight until a couple hours ago. So this is all very, very awesome. But I would imagine that it might have come up in your conversations, although it might not have as well, our compatriot and really a kind of sponsor and patron of Rocks over the years, Eric White, now Eric Spears. Also had a very similar experience with his another couple.
We talked about this. I actually got them. You talked to Eric, right, Matt? Bart, Matt just lost his connection somehow.
Oh, that's all right. He can call
back in. We can try to put this on speakerphone, or he can try to dial in again.
Oh, yeah, you can do speakerphone, but or dial back in. Either way, should work.
Try to dial back in.
You may remember that
it's 40164.
Code word that we or the vocabulary word that Eric invented for that was funkle, because he was
funkle.
The father and the uncle to his children, because they were born through the his non-blood relation, his sister's lover.
His
female lover. And twice, if I recall, or
we should probably go upstairs. Let's go up back. Okay. So we're trying to get Matt back here because
that is fascinating. because I love. Now, Jay, I must also recall to you that the theme of this series, The Nightcap, is, of course, beverage related. So what are you drinking there?
I'm having, believe it or not, I'm having a bourbon and diet.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, it's actually.
Well, what's Matt drinking?
He's actually having a gin and tonic. It looks like he's mixing that with, let's see, which gin are you using? Are you having some dry fly here, Matt? Or are you having? He's having some dry fly gin, which is made over in Washington State, and they have clearly decided that their main marketing push is to sort of capitalize on the fishing theme. And so,
fishing gin,
you know, drive
gin and fishing.
Are yeah,
you,
yeah.
Really?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that fly fishermen are gin drinkers necessarily, but they, you know.
I recently had a conversation with some of the. I was hanging out with a fairly, male group of people. And I said, you know, there's many things that people might say about me, but by God, don't call me a gin drinker. The problem with that is, I guess, that I love gin. It's just that I have some identity issues there.
Yeah, well, gin is kind of, at least regionally here, I don't know if this is the case across the nation, but gin is rather gay. It's, you know, like the classic gin and tonic, you know, a lot of guys are afraid to admit that that's a drink that they like because it's sort of spritzy and festive and uplifting and tickles your nose. And those are not things that sort of hearty men of the mountain would like you to think that they would drink.
It's the antithesis of Yukon Jack.
Right, exactly.
So how's Matt doing getting there online?
He's having some struggles. His phone seems to be just completely flipping out on him right now.
Well,
and it's unfortunate because we were coming to something of an apotheosis, I don't know if that's even...
It's not
even,
a syphilis. But what about the speakerphone?
I have no idea. It just came to my head. Matt just asked me what that word means, and I can't remember, but...
What about the speakerphone?
What's that?
Your speakerphone feature. Why don't you use that?
We could use speakerphone. That is correct. It looks like he's kind of giving up... And we've wandered out into the yard at this point, and it looks like he's given up on his phone and is concentrating on peeing on my tree. So I'm going to
describe the situation there verbally to us, and you know, I just want to give you a good picture of what's going on.
Yeah. So I'm going to go inside just momentarily to see if I can figure out speakerphone on this phone. So just a second.
Oh, yeah, so you can have a little light. That's fine. You know, I'll continue
to
marry.
Okay, so my main battery is low. Speakerphone on. I'm looking. Is this speakerphone?
I don't know. It's good to me. It's good stuff.
We need softly. Let's see if I can turn up the volume. Do you hear us?
Oh, I hear you quite well. And I thought I heard Matt there, but I guess I'm imagining.
I can hear you. You're still pretty faint, but if Joe keeps holding the phone in this position, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Well, I can speak up if need be.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Well, we're having to stand sort of close to the phone and close to each other, but, you know, we're not so much a couple as a duo.
Right.
So,
in spite of the fact that I am holding a gin and tonic, and Joe just informed all of us that this is a gay drink, which I was kind of unaware of, but it kind of fits, and it explains a lot of things, really. At least
have you ever,
I love
have you ever, yes, that is fantastic. Speaking of gins, I've been recently enthralled by Heyman's Old Tom gin. Are you familiar with the Old Tom style of gin?
No, I'm not either.
Well, it's sweeter.
It's what?
Sweeter.
All clear. Gin is clear.
Oh, clear.
No. Sweeter. Okay. Oh, this is not working out too well at all.
Yeah,
no, it's sweeter.
Restart your phone, and we'll see if that works.
I turned it off and turned it on again.
Okay, so now try to dial in.
Yeah, dial in there, and let us just say that Old Tom's gin, an Old Tom gin is like a sweeter version of this London Dry gin. Of course, is the most prevalent style of gin that's available now. So Old Tom is sweeter than that. And I like it a lot.
That's very strange.
I mean, the Matt's phone,
is strange, not the fact that Old Tom's gin is gayer than London Dry gin or whatever
right.
the hell you were saying.
Exactly.
Yeah. Gayer, sweeter, what have you.
Yeah. So I do have some news to report. We've been talking about life and death and sort of how we got to where we are and all of that. I am actually super happy to report, and Matt doesn't know this, so he's going to hear this first in this little
guide.
My mom met a guy and...
What?
Had some dates and stuff.
Oh my God!
And
yeah,
she's pregnant.
No, unfortunately not. Although actually, probably best that she's not. But she is. She went on a mission to Ecuador for a couple of weeks to help build a church down there. Actually, I think it was a school. And there was this guy that she met there, and they hit it off. She had told me that she was absolutely, positively never going to go on a date or be involved with another man ever because she was totally devoted to my dad. And, you know, I want her to be happy is the main thing. So, like...
Yeah.
Whatever made her happy, but she apparently hit it off with this guy and actually came back to Texas for a couple of days to prepare to come here to Montana next week and stayed with him for a couple of days. And, you know, they're, you know, like getting the jiggy on, and I'm all happy. So,
hey.
Wow. That's awesome.
You met him in Ecuador, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and he's actually coming to Montana next week, but not, he's going on a hiking trip just randomly. You know, this is another one of those, like,
cosmic
coincidences. He's coming to Montana to go on a backcountry hiking trip with some friends in the Bob Marshall Wilderness, which is north of here, but he's not going to...
You know, a couple of hours drive.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't see my mom, the Bob Marshall.
That is a totally Western thing to say, by the way. It's only a couple hours drive.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just have to express my complete apparently dysfunction here, because I can't think of the words. I don't believe it. I can't believe the cosmic connection of that. Like, he had that planned in advance.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, with several other guys. Like, he didn't even know where he was quite flying into. Like, supposedly they won't be in touch because he's going to be out in the woods. We'll see. Hopefully he's not a stalker. You know, but
he's going to come here, and he's actually never going back to Texas. And
right.
Here is your mom.
Yeah,
that's the way it's going to happen.
Exactly. Well, it would be great, but I would also say that, you know, like, insofar as you know that, like, cosmic shit happens when it comes to people coming to Montana.
Yeah, Missoula.
Yeah. Maybe we can trust that this is just one of those coincidences.
Well, if we were making a Rocks episode out of this, we could call it Montana, the mystical state.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because Indiana, we called that the mystical state one time, but it's not the mystical state. It's the corn state.
Right. Well, I thought Iowa was the corn
Their
state.
Their mysticism is corny.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Whereas here in Montana, mysticism is the real shit, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Real. That's awesome.
Which you would know, by the way, if you would fucking come up here and visit.
that's in the plan.
Clear enough?
Yeah, Bart. When you coming?
Well, if you'll check the production schedule, you'll see that I'm coming up there in 2013.
The what schedule?
The production schedule, which I sent you.
Oh, the production schedule, yes. Yeah, exactly.
2013. Bart, I'm sorry to tell you this, but the world is going to end before then.
Yeah.
The Earl,
yeah, well,
the Earl wins, the world ends on, you know, in 2012.
Yeah.
You don't
Rush
have to tell me that, because, by the way, I live down on the Gulf Coast, so we're all very familiar with the world ending.
It is the end times down there, I
going
hear.
On since,
clear
yeah,
time. It's raining oil.
Here, strangely enough. And, so now that the environmental apocalypse is upon me, I keep a blog. I write regularly on my blog. And guess what? I have people who read the blog and comment and leave little helpful tips for me. And one of the tips that's been left for me consistently is, by the way, you need to move up north,
yeah,
to where all the white people are, to get away from what you're dealing with down there. And it's just really kind of creepy and weird. I mean, the commenter, who I don't even want to name, apparently likes me. And I get the feeling anyway that he's following my life story, if you will, and that he identifies with me in some kind of way, but he seems to represent some values that I'm in tune with and some values that I'm way out of whack with. I mean, way, way out of whack. And I just find it very, really, it's almost put me off of blogging entirely, because you have to kind of realize, well, okay, you know, if I'm putting this out there for everybody to read, then, you know, who knows who's out there reading this stuff? Who knows?
Yeah.
And they could be very, very, very creepy people, one way or another. And I just, I'm really kind of at a loss, because, you know, I mean, any reply to such an individual is only going to further their interest in me, and I don't want to further that interest. So.
Right.
Yeah.
You should simply discard those replies and move forward as with the integrity you maintain, and their replies will end there.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, I have a feeling, I get the sense that, every celebrity of any stripe would love to respond to everyone in a theoretical sense. But, you know, you can't always do that. And, you could always hide behind the fact that you have so many fans of your blog that you can't possibly respond to all of them all the time.
Sure. Well, once upon a time, when early on in this relationship, if you want to call it that, I responded once or twice, and that let the person know that I am, you know, I do read my comments and so forth, and that seemed to be all the fuel that he needed to, you know, keep after it. But at that time, I didn't realize just what I was dealing with, and I just don't know what to make of it. I mean, you know, it's and what Matt was saying, I thought was, you know, pretty good advice. I mean, that's pretty much what I'm doing. To me, you know, this blogging is kind of the closest thing I have to a daily spiritual practice in my life. It's a time to, I try to make time for this almost every day to reflect on my life, where it's going, and to kind of write about what's going on, be it ever so minute, be it ever so trivial, and so forth. And it usually takes, you know, a good hour or so of the day to accomplish that. And to me, that's a form of kind of meditation and reflection. To me, it's almost a religious practice. And so it's something I'm very, I guess what I'm saying is I'm very loath to give it up. And yet, when I start to realize the full implications of putting it out there, I start to wonder if that is really wise or not. So this is actually a question I think that's inherent in the very heart of the project, you know, of rocks going back to 1992, when you and I started this, Jay. You know, it combined my love of kind of recording and journaling and putting out there that, you know, daily or regular documentation of what's going on in our personal lives and putting it out there for public consumption, which is why I was drawn into the web in the first place, the World Wide Web, before it really even became a phenomenon, or as soon as it became a phenomenon. But I'm also sensing, you know, somewhat the limitations of that and the kind of a kind of tragedy of the commons, if you will.
I think that the tragedy of the commons is something that we've confronted at multiple times over the course of this project, and I think that you know, you have devoted yourself to a kind of openness and life lived publicly that most of the rest of the world can't even fathom, frankly.
Well, hold on, though. Hold on. Because my sense is actually that the whole rest of the world is very much onto this, because look at all the social networking stuff that's going on the Internet. I mean, this is like now, I feel like the main driving motivation that's led me to these things that we're talking about is pervasive in the culture, right? And so I don't feel particularly special in that regard anymore. It seems, in fact, like whatever impetus I felt personally is just reflective of kind of a trend in the general culture. And
yeah.
And so I feel like, you know, all of my efforts in that regard are kind of lost in the sea of all of this public revelation and what's the word I'm looking for, confession, and just living publicly, to the point that the most popular or at least the fastest growing net social network site, right? The Facebook, the Zuckerberg guy, the guy who created that, said that privacy was no longer the default, you know, for our culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously, he represents a certain interest in that, and there's a lot of people who are getting sucked into that, who have a lot of misgivings, much, much deeper than I do, and so forth. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is that everybody seems to be doing it these days, right? I mean, everybody seems to be participating in this kind of let's share and with one another and as much as possible.
Well, but you're absolutely right in a macro sense, Bart. But I think in a specific sense, there is nobody else that I have come across, certainly at this point, who has a kind of pan-media, well, not necessarily pan-media, because it seems to me that it's all online with you, but you are representing yourself across different online social networks in a way that actually you've managed to keep unified and keep a conversation going that has threads and that kind of thing, which, you know, like most people get on Facebook and say, I had turkey for dinner, you know, and then their next post is, I think it's bad that Obama wants to change health care. And then, you know, I mean, like, you don't get a sense of the person, a sense of a personal relationship.
All right, yes. My boss, by the way, said something very similar recently. So you may be on to something. And yet, it doesn't seem really sufficient. Although I will tell you that I am going to be on Radio Disney in a week or two from now for kids.
What? Really?
Yeah. So, but let's not delve into that right now. What I really wanted to get into in this conversation a little bit was the schedule for Rocks, the fourth season. And I just wanted to outline for you very quickly the kind of place where I see this going. It just occurred to me, as I may have mentioned earlier, in a kind of blinding flash, that we have the opportunity here, now that we're adopting a more leisurely pace, as it would seem, towards production, as life continues to make other demands on us, that we could finish off this long-awaited Rocks 96 in the next year, 2011, Life and Death on the Rocks. And then look at a couple more episodes to get us up to Rocks 99 in 2014. And that has long been planned to be the four seasons, which we thought was a nice riff on the fact that we've had four seasons of Rocks and a chance to do something a little more ambitious in the production cycle of just looking at actually, you know, producing something, shooting video year-round and trying to capture four seasons on video and kind of do some fun stuff with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then taking a break for a little bit and gearing up for our 100th episode, which, if we timed it well, could come out in 2017, according to this little schedule that I have in my mind. That's 25 years from the original debut of the original Rock. And by the way, I would also be celebrating my 50th birthday. So it just seems kind of you know, 25, 50, these seem like big numbers. And also I've long had it in mind that it would be a worthy goal, a worthy thing, a worthy project to kind of compile a book, if you will, what one would expect from our 100th episode, you know, there would be kind of a retrospective in some ways. And it seemed to me that there's a book in the making of this as well, as a TV show.
Yeah.
So it just kind of seemed to me that this would be something fun to aim for. And, you know, just to kind of back up and move through it once again, Rocks 96, Life and Death on the Rocks, is something that kind of took a back seat when my daughter was actually born and I faced three different technical problems that all just seemed to crop up at the same time, and I just felt overwhelmed. But we had shot all the stuff for that, and really everything was in line to make that episode happen. And I kind of want to just revisit that and go back and try to make it happen again, hopefully without reshooting anything. If I can take the steps that I think are necessary to technically, you know, pull it off. If not, we might have to shoot some video and so forth to do it. But I think that if we can bring that back as a snapshot of where we were 2 years ago, that would be worth it.
Then
we
for
have
sure.
Rocks 97 and 98, which in my mind, 97 has for a while been an idea which I like to call clusterfuck, which our experimental, you know, a more experimental episode, and we can come back to exactly what that means. The more of the revelation, the more of the new idea that I had recently was Rocks 98. What would that be? That was never clear in my mind what Rocks 98 would be. And it just came to me that we've been talking for a long time about, you know, you got to get out here to Missoula, Bart. You got to come and visit. And I want to. I've been wanting to for a long time. So why not make that what Rocks 98 is about, and any other pilgrimages that we might need, you know, feel entailed to take upon ourselves. And that brings us, of course, to Rocks 99, the Four Seasons, and Rocks 100. So there you have it. I mean, that's just, it all seems to me to make sense as a general plan.
Strikes me as perfectly cosmic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfectly cosmic, and I would add, insofar as it seems to sort of build toward you guys coming out here and letting us host you, anything that I can do to further along your plan so that it results in that, I'm all about.
Well, that is great to hear because, you know, as you may be aware, Christy does not travel well. I would like to, of course, bring her along on this journey, but, you know, I'm also trying to think ahead and just trying to think, okay, if we do it and we do it right, we should be able to get her out there without too much drama, but it'll be, you know, a production in and of itself.
Yeah.
Or, on the other hand, you know, it might shape up just to be a thing where I just bring my daughter out there. So, whatever. I wouldn't want to just come out all by myself. I think I would want to at least bring some portion of my family along.
Yeah.
The question is how much.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice to see your parents, but you know, short of that, you know, it'd be great to at least see the fundamental unit of you and Christy and Persephone, and you know, whatever season you choose, we will be sure to put you in a situation where you will never want to come back, and yet you will never forget it.
I thought you were going to say you never want to come back, but you'll never want to leave.
Came to me in a drunken haze. I don't know if it really was the appropriate thing to say. For Christy, I would say that Montana is the land of big dreams and a big guy of opportunity, and if you can't find something to like here, you're not looking.
Oh, I think she would love it there, but the problem is, you got to understand, the problem is it's a long drive, so if we were to drive out there, oh, God. And, she gets car sick, she gets migraines. It's just, oh, my God. You just don't want to be in the car with her on a long trip.
Do you not fly?
I hate flying.
You don't want to drive out here. I've driven this distance. I've actually driven from Florida to Missoula, and you don't want to drive. Don't drive. Fly.
Okay, yes. I just hate flying as well, But we're going to pull it off. We got years, according to my plan at least, we've got a couple of years to figure this out. So.
Yeah, flying is an intense experience of sort of short-term guilt as your child screams and poops and projectile vomits on other people. But, you get off that plane and those people never see you again, and then your life is better.
Yeah, I hate that. I really do. And it's just, it's so, it's so horrible. There was a nice train that went all, just directly from New Orleans to Missoula. That would be pretty awesome. But you got to change trains in Chicago. Hello? I'm not even hearing anybody on the other end of this call, so I'm guessing that it's all over. Well, this has been fun talking to you all. I guess I'm going to, terminate this call and hope that it's been recorded. Thank you. Yes. Technical aspects are always the hardest to deal with. All right, so how do you technically go? Oh, star 2, star 1.